This is the NPR News Update for Friday, April 17th. I'm Perry Finelli. On today's podcast, police in Robbinsdale shot a woman reported to be carrying a knife last night. Two people were injured in an early morning shooting at a Norwood Young America gas station. A man is due in Wisconsin court today in the stabbing death of a fisherman on the St. Croix River. And the Minnesota Senate has rejected a plan to allow liquor stores to open on Sundays. Police in Robbinsdale shot a woman reported to be carrying a knife last night. Tim Nelson has more.
Authorities said officers were called just before 6 p.m. to an apartment complex on the 3700 block of Hubbard Avenue North on a call about an unwanted person. Police arrived and said they found a woman with a knife who refused to comply with commands by officers. A Robbinsdale police officer shot her. No police were injured in the confrontation. She was taken to a nearby hospital, but authorities aren't saying how badly she was injured. Neither she nor the officer that shot her have been identified. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Two people were injured in an early morning shooting at a Norwood Young America gas station. Carver County Sheriff Jim Olson says it involved a McLeod County Sheriff's deputy and an unruly patron.
The off-duty officer had just been here getting some gas. He was on his way home after a shift was done. A struggle ensued. Both parties have sustained non-life-threatening injuries, and there was a firearm that was discharged.
Olson says the struggle and the nature of the injuries are under investigation by the BCA. He says the unruly patron was found at another location away from the gas station and that the deputy was still wearing part of his uniform. Tim Nelson also tells us a man is due in Wisconsin court today in the stabbing death of a fisherman on the St. Croix River.
Polk County Sheriff Peter Johnson says a man accompanied by his lawyer turned himself in yesterday afternoon. Authorities say 34-year-old Peter Kelly was stabbed in the midst of a dispute between two groups of fishermen on opposite sides of the St. Croix River. One group crossed the river, and there was a confrontation in a park on the Wisconsin side. Kelly died a short time later. Polk County authorities say they've also located a pair of vehicles they'd been looking for and interviewed two other men who left the scene of the stabbing. Authorities haven't yet identified the suspect. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
This is the NPR News Update. The Minnesota Senate has rejected a plan to allow liquor stores to open on Sundays. Tim Pugmire reports.
Despite mounting pressure from Sunday sales advocates, lawmakers chose to stick with the statewide ban. They defeated an amendment to a larger liquor bill on a 35-28 vote. DFL Senator David Tomasoni of Chisholm said Main Street liquor stores need a day off and would be hurt financially by the proposed change.
If you really need a bottle of wine for Sunday, buy it on Saturday, buy it on Friday, buy two or three on Friday or Saturday so you're ready for it on Sunday.
Supporters of Sunday sales stress that many stores are losing business to neighboring states on Sunday. They also believe a repeal of the ban is inevitable. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Minnesota's unemployment rate held steady for an eighth straight month in March as the state added about 7,800 jobs. Matt Sepik has more.
Most of the gains were in healthcare and education. Professional and business services, including corporate management, led the losses. That may be due in part to major staff cuts at Target headquarters early last month. State labor market economist Steve Hines says the labor force participation rate grew for a third straight month. He says that's good in the short term, but baby boomer retirements make it unsustainable.
Even if it's temporary, the increase in our labor force here provides the wherewithal to continue job growth at a decent rate.
The participation rate is at its highest level since 2012, but Hine cautions the increase could be a statistical anomaly. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Leaders of the Minneapolis Urban League say they welcome a review by the state legislative auditor after allegations of double dipping. Laura Ewan has more.
Auditor Jim Noble says he'll gather some preliminary information on the organization before he decides whether to launch a full-blown investigation. The Star Tribune reported that the Urban League accepted more than $1 million from the Minnesota Department of Education and Minneapolis Public Schools to do similar work. But Urban League Board Chairman Clinton Collins Jr. says routine audits in recent months showed his organization acted appropriately.
The Minnesota Department of Education and the school system each knew that we were contracting with the other, and they each had the opportunity to audit what we were doing. There has been no one from either entity that has raised a formal complaint of double dipping with us.
The Urban League runs an alternative school and a separate program to help struggling young adults. Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Sex abuse victims who have not yet come forward to file a claim against the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis may see their window of opportunity shrink. A federal judge plans to at least initially give abuse victims only until August to file claims. Martin Moreland reports.
Minnesota law gives abuse victims until May of next year to file lawsuits for abuse that happened long ago. But the Archdiocese contended it isn't necessary to give abuse victims that long to file claims in the church's bankruptcy. The Archdiocese requested an August 3rd claim filing deadline, arguing that would help resolve claims faster and lower the cost of its bankruptcy, enabling victims to share funds that could otherwise go to lawyers. Archdiocese attorneys argued a deadline of next May would complicate the bankruptcy and increase uncertainty and worry among Twin Cities Catholics. Archdiocese attorney Charles Rogers said an August filing date is fair to victims and the Archdiocese.
The August date will set now if not the deadline, at least a point in time where we can then define the universe of claims. The claims that are timely filed and made by August 3 will then be considered in part of the mediation process.
The Archdiocese, abuse victims, insurers, parishes, and other parties are now in mediation trying to work out a plan that assures the future of the Archdiocese and compensates victims. Abuse attorney Jeff Anderson argued for aligning the bankruptcy claims date with the state window for filing abuse lawsuits. But Judge Robert Kressel said he didn't see what victims would gain by having more time, though he said he would later grant it if warranted. Anderson said it's now critical for abuse victims to come forward so their claims could be considered as part of the bankruptcy. Victims who don't file might not be compensated later or could get lesser settlements.
There is a real urgency for survivors of abuse to know that there is a time limit for them to make a claim and come forward. And when they do, they can have their privacy fully protected.
The judge said he would assure victim privacy by requiring each person reading a claim to sign a confidentiality agreement. Anderson said there may be many victims who have not yet brought themselves to make a claim.
Well, survivors of sexual abuse by authority figures, clergy included, suffer in silence, blaming themselves, living in fear, and rarely disclose it to anybody. And they keep it a secret. A toxic secret, often for decades.
Bob Schwerdersky is an abuse victim and former head of the Minnesota chapter of the Survivors Network of those abused by priests. He said he's more bothered by the Archdiocese response to victims than the claim deadline.
They have not done a damn thing relative to aggressively reaching out to those that have been harmed. They've come up with all these lists of priests and their assignments, yet they have not stood at the pulpits in those places and reached out.
The Archdiocese plans to publicize the August 3rd claim filing date extensively with notices in local and national publications and other media channels. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
This is the NPR News Update. Ecolab will move its headquarters across downtown St. Paul in a real estate deal that should close this summer. The move was among the downtown developments highlighted in St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman's State of the City address last night. Peter Cox has more.
The Travelers North Tower, the pyramid-topped building with the company logo, is set to change ownership. St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman announced the sale agreement during his State of the City address last night.
And I'm excited to confirm the oft-rumored plans that Ecolab will purchase Travelers North Tower, bringing their downtown employees in together in a wonderful and fast-growing Fortune 500 company.
A Travelers spokesperson says the two companies negotiated the sale of the 17-story tower over several months. The deal, the terms of which were not disclosed, should become final by the end of summer. The plan is to move all of Travelers' 2,000 St. Paul employees into the company's south building. Ecolab will shift 1,500 employees currently working out of a few downtown buildings into the new global headquarters. Ecolab spokesman Roman Blahusky says of the three buildings along Wabasha Street, only one is actually owned by the company. He says it will be 3 years before they move to the Travelers building.
The Ecolab Corporate Center, it's a 19-story building, is leased through June 30th, 2018. The Ecolab University Center, that is a 15-story building, is leased through 2019.
Mayor Coleman highlighted Ecolab's move among several changes across the city, including the Saints Baseball Park and the new Ordway Concert Hall for the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. Coleman said growth is happening in other places as well.
In 2014, the city's Department of Safety and Inspections issued building permits representing $715 million worth of activity, nearly double what we saw 5 years earlier. That translates into a lot of women and men working and providing for their families.
Coleman acknowledged that long vacant sites need attention, too.
In downtown, Macy's, the West Publishing Building, the Gateway Parcel, and other opportunities must be seized. The Westside Flats, Victoria Park, Beacon Bluff, Whirlpool, Hafner's, and other sites across the city must be developed.
Jenna Ward attended the speech. Since her move to St. Paul 4 years ago, Ward said she's enjoyed the parks, the art scene, and the neighborhoods, including Lower Town. But she says downtown is kind of dead.
But there's really just no reason to be in large pockets of downtown after dark. There's just nothing happening. Nothing good happening. There may be things happening, but definitely ghost towny.
St. Paul Port Authority head Louis Jamboy expects once the empty Macy's building is filled, it will bring new life to downtown. The Port Authority bought the building last year for $3 million.
We could have sold the building a dozen times by now, but we weren't satisfied that the uses were going to be the kinds of uses that would make us all proud and help St. Paul continue to grow and flourish and generate excitement.
Jamboy says getting the right mix into the building is the key to more redevelopment.
We have some serious retail interest. We have some office interest. We've got some recreational / entertainment hospitality interest in the property. And if we can bring those all together, it'll transform that part of downtown St. Paul.
Among those showing interest in the site is the Minnesota Wild. Officials with the hockey club confirmed in February they're considering the site for a practice facility. Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Two Minnesota Democrats in Congress are having a public spat over mining. Brett Neely reports.
4th District DFL Congresswoman Betty McCollum, who represents St. Paul and the surrounding suburbs, introduced a bill this week that would bar new federal mineral leases for sulfide mining near the boundary waters in Voyageurs National Park. 8th District DFL Congressman Rick Nolan represents northeastern Minnesota and says existing pollution laws are strong enough and that McCollum's bill goes too far.
It has the potential to put at least four of our mining iron ore mining companies out of business and prohibit any mining from going forward in the future.
McCollum vigorously disagrees.
I'm not shutting down any current mining.
It's a moot issue for now. The GOP-controlled Congress is extremely unlikely to take up or pass legislation imposing tougher environmental standards on mining. Brett Neely, Minnesota Public Radio News, Washington.
Xcel Energy has been named the top utility for wind energy for the 11th year in a row. Elizabeth Dunbar reports.
Xcel says only the states of Texas, Iowa, California, and 9 countries in the world produce more than 5,000 megawatts of wind capacity. And Xcel plans to add more wind power. Between now and 2016, the utility says it will add more than 1,200 additional megawatts. Among states, Texas has the largest wind capacity. Minnesota is ranked 8th. Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Elizabeth also reports a new University of Minnesota study supports the idea that biodiversity can help ecosystems thrive.
The study published in the journal Science analyzed 28 years' worth of data from grasslands where scientists used fire, fertilizer, and other human influences and watched their impacts. They found that those influences mattered the most to plant growth when they also affected the diversity of plant species. The university's Forrest Isbell is a study co-author. He says the study suggests diversity helps ensure reliable plant growth over time, which could have important implications for agriculture.
It's hard to know whether there will be a drought this year coming up, but we still have to plant something now. And so this diversity is becoming increasingly appreciated as something that can help us hedge our bets against unpredictable environmental variability.
The experiments took place at the Cedar Creek Ecosystem Science Reserve near East Bethel. Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's the NPR News Update for Friday, April 17th. I'm Perry Finelli. Thanks for listening.